go!
And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and I'm your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan. And today I'm in Margaret River in the southwest of Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan. Today I'm sitting in sunny Western Australia. I'm still back home and absolutely loving it.
So good to have you back in WA, Mon. We're absolutely thrilled to welcome Lee Hanacek, who's the Chief Operating Officer of Karting Australia. I've known Lee, or we've known each other for about 20 years. We first met through Rally Australia. You were working for Karting Australia back then, like 20-something years ago, and you're still working for Karting Australia now. Like, you obviously must love your job. Tell us what's kept you there for two decades.
Yeah, I mean, I've been enrolled in motorsport for some 30 years now through different areas, in speedway, in karting, in supercars, in World Rally Championship, different roles in hobbies, and then turn into a career in public relations, where I met yourself, as you said, through Rally Australia. And then through the company I was working for, I got back involved in karting, looking through their media and public relations as a contractor. And then for the last 14 years, I've been full-time back with Karting Australia. So it has been a long journey in the sport. You've seen a lot of young drivers come through. And you've seen some great talents, which we'll speak about over the next little bit. But it really is the sport that you see these young drivers come through, and to be able to give them the platform, as I described into someone today about the fact that where karting sits in the motorsport ecosystem and how many great young talents you've seen come throughout the years. And yeah, it is exciting to see how many of these young talented drivers, both boys and girls, are now coming through the ranks. And they might not all make it to Formula One. Well, they won't make it all to Formula One, but they might not make it to supercars. But as one of the young girls that I actually had an interview with today for a special project we've got going on, concept was the fact that she wants to be involved in motorsport somehow. She wants to be either a Formula One driver, a supercars driver, or work in a supercars team. She doesn't care. She wants to be involved in motorsport, and she's now, I think she was 12 years of age. So she'd already been racing for 4 or 5 years. And that's the type of thing that as a sport, I'm very proud of the fact that, we are providing these inspirations for these young drivers.
Karting seems to be the breeding ground and the starting point for anyone that has, you've just explained it, for anyone that wants to get into the motorsport world in general. So what sort of age can you start in go-karting? Like, what's normal for people to start in go-karting?
There's no such word as normal when it comes to motorsport, but effectively you can start practicing at the age of 6. You can start racing at the age of 7.
Right.
We have young drivers all across Australia competing from that age right through to our oldest license holder, I believe, is something in the vicinity of 83 years of age. So, we describe karting as both an inspirational sport and also a destination sport. So, if you want to start, go head towards supercars or Formula One or World Endurance Championship or sports car racing, well, you can use that as a platform to move on through. But if you just want to do it as a hobby and enjoy the sport, you can do that as well. So it's very much a two-pronged attack in terms of the sport and what it can provide. And one of the biggest things that it does provide is the bond that it creates with young kids and their parents.
Yeah, right.
It's not a case of you can drop your kids off to the soccer field and go play soccer for an hour, go train for an hour, and then I'll pick you up at the end. It's all weekend. They travel together. The bond that creates for both child, mum, dad, brother, sister, it's more than just a trophy or winning a race. It's a lifestyle, and it's also a journey they all travel together. They win, they lose together.
Yeah.
And the emotions run high. As my CEO, Kelvin O'Reilly, has said for a long time, the best thing about sport is emotion. The worst thing about sport is emotion.
Is emotion. Absolutely.
And that's what you get. Yeah. So it is just, it's fantastic to see. And the excitement from these kids when they do succeed is just out of this world.
Oh, it'd be so rewarding. I can just imagine, especially watching a young person, maybe someone a bit smaller, struggling against some older kids, and watching them improve each week would be hugely rewarding. If kids don't come from a motorsport family, but they're interested in karting, does Karting Australia also work with parents to, I guess, almost mentoring them of what they need to do to help their kid?
Yeah, directly as Karting Australia, we sort of try and guide them. There's a category we've got in the sport called the 4SS class, which is four-stroke karting, which is very low maintenance, low economical class. And really with that, it's about the fundamentals. You don't need to know about them. You don't need to be mechanically minded, but you can still get the taste for it and build yourself up. Because when we introduced the class 6 years ago now, it's all about the basics. And then you can learn that, learn those basics, and then move up to the more technically minded classes. And by that time, you sort of get a bit of an idea of what you need to do mechanically. But a lot of the people in our sport these days, they're not all just from a trade background or what I call the blue collar worker. Years ago, back in the 80s and 90s, it was dominated by mechanics, plumbers, carpenters, those type of industries. Whereas now it's those people, but it's also the people who may not have been around motorsport. They may have come into it through, the drive to survive factor, the fact that they've seen this Formula One, big, glossy, exciting sport, and go, how do I get my kid involved? Or how do I get my rush? Because it's not always about the kids. It's all about adults as well, who can get their opportunity and enjoy the thrills of motorsport.
And can I ask, speaking of families and families being involved, obviously motorsport it's not, especially the further you progress in whatever category it is you're doing, it's not a cheap sport. It's not a sport that you can just spend, 2 hours on the weekend playing. As you've mentioned, it is an all weekend thing. So what do you tell families to prepare for that? Or, how do you have any advice for families, I guess, that are coming into the sport and want to see their kids be the next Senna? Or what would you say to them?
It is a very, very long journey if that's where you want to be. The first step is is to make sure that your kid is having fun. We see so many families come into the sport, think their child is going to be the next superstar. They put a lot of pressure on the kids. They put too much pressure on the kids. And within a few years, the kids don't want to do it anymore. It's all about the kids having fun. And if that then means after a few years that it turns out that, those kids want to go further, well, then you pursue that and you leave no stone unturned for your child to pursue their dream. But at the same time, you've got to be realistic about what you can achieve and what contacts you've got and what you can do. And, there are drivers who they're probably talented enough to be chasing an F1 dream. But have they got the right people in their corner and got the right budget? Unfortunately not. So they then turn their focus onto other forms of motorsport. Like I said, with this young girl we're talking to today, is that it's not just about being a driver either. There's other ways which you can be involved in motorsport, still get the same thrill of being involved in a professional team, but nice in the driver's seat. And that's one thing that is very key. And I look up and down pit lane of the supercars paddock at the moment. We've got a a former Australian karting champion, as one of the lead engineers on a supercars team. They've got data engineers that come from a karting background, mechanics who have come from a karting background. So some of them had dreams of being a supercar driver, but unfortunately didn't work out. So they pivoted over somewhere else where they can still chase a dream of being involved in motorsport. And that's one of the things that the karting also teaches these young kids. It's not just about the driving. These days, you need to understand data. You need to understand mechanics. You need to understand everything at such a young age. You need to be watching the vision to see what the car, how you're reacting in different situations. So all of these things, and you're 12 years of age and you're talking about, data and mechanic setup and tyre pressures and all of these things.
I can't even do maths properly at 35.
It's incredible. We've got some young drivers. I think we've got four that are based full-time in Europe this year, the young Australian drivers, and another one that's flying back and forward, all of which are very talented and are chasing the dream over there. And some of their families are relocated over to Italy to allow the kids to chase their dream.
That's just so huge, isn't it? It's just massive.
It's a lot of effort.
Yeah, to uproot a whole family on a young person's dream. And look, I don't know about other kids, but I know that I wanted to be about six different things by the time I was like 16. So to invest so much, the kids must really, 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 with every cell in their body, want it.
It's no mean feat moving your whole family over to another country, let alone, as you said, for something that maybe might not turn out.
As Lee said, it's really not an easy pathway to get to the top of motorsport either. Only, I don't know what the percentage is, but I expect it would be 0.000, like next to nothing, like that make it to the top. But other drivers like Oscar Piastri, he moved to Europe on his own and went to boarding school while his family stayed in Melbourne. He's got younger brothers and sisters. And how does Karting Australia support the pathway, I guess? Is there financial help? Do you help with introductions to other teams in Europe? Do European scouts come to Australia and watch the karting events? Like, how does it work behind the scenes?
I mean, more so our role as Karting Australia is being able to provide the platform to help these drivers prepare for, if they want to go overseas, that we've got the platform here that they can better themselves and be prepared for future endeavours overseas. Now, over the last 12 years, we changed the structure of the sport significantly in 2013 from in simple terms, went from a state-based board who will make all the decisions to a board of directors, a skilled board of directors led by Mick Doohan.
Oh, hello. We know that name.
He was our chairman. In 2013, we moved to that new structure. We then changed the platform for our Australian Championship. And from there, we built the sport to more of a modern sport and be able to provide the opportunity for these drivers. And so it's no surprise at all to see how many good young drivers have now had the platform to go overseas because they're on the same similar equipment to what's now racing overseas.
Yes, sure.
They've got some of the hardest talent here in Australia. It's well considered that we've got the most competitive national championship, multi-round national championship in the world.
We are the biggest
national championship and multi-round championship in the Southern Hemisphere. It's just ballooned into this platform that gives these drivers the opportunity, to the point where last year we had an Australian finish runner-up in the World Junior Karting Championship.
Fantastic.
So young James Agnosiadis, he finished runner-up, and the only time that we've had a driver high up on the podium in a World Championship was a guy you may have heard of, James Courtney. He won in 1995, won the Junior. And 1997 won the World Senior Championship. So Andrew's doing a great job over
30 years.
30 years, correct. Celebrating 30 years this year. So we've had some great results over the last few years in that aspect. Yeah, Oscar Piastri, as you mentioned, was one of them. James Wharton, who's racing Formula 3 this year. He's spent a lot of time in his Formula years over in Europe. And his father set up a race team over there to help Australians while James was racing over there in karting, his father Shane has been instrumental in a lot of young drivers' careers and opening the doors for a few of them over there as well, but learning from what he's gone through with James as a kart racer.
Yeah, and I assume Jack Doohan's come up through all that as well, and yes. Any of the yep. Australians that we've seen in Formula 3, Formula 2, Formula 1, they've all come up through Karting Australia?
Yes. So over the last decade, you've had, Oscar Piastri, obviously. He won the very first round of the Australian Kart Championship when we went to the new modern era. So he won the first round in 2015. Jack?
He would have been a little tucker.
He was a little tucker. And yeah, he also won the Race of Stars that year, which was an invitational event for the top drivers we had on the Gold Coast. And I distinctly remember Oscar, we were at the podium and we had surfboards similar to what the supercars do on the Gold Coast, but we had them for the Race of Stars karting event. On the bottom of each of the nine surfboards, we had Gold Coast across the bottom, so G-O-L-D on each of the one letter on each board. And he came up and he said, Can I get the surfboard that's got the O on the bottom for Oscar?
So, darling.
Yep. So it's one of the stories you just remember. You go, okay, yep, you can have this over here. So, yep, no problem.
Oh,
so,
bless.
Yeah, Oscar came through there in 2015. Jack was sort of 2016-17. Yeah, Brock Feeney in supercars as well. So when you look at our elite junior, the KA2 class, Kai Allen, who's making his supercars full-time debut this year with Grove Racing. So there's so much young talents come through over the last decade. That James Wharton, as I said, Christian Mansell is another, all who have come through. And you sort of see these drivers progress and watch their progress as they move through.
And yeah, that your heart just must swell every time you see these drivers succeeding. And like even now, like do you watch Oscar Piastri racing in F1 and, you know, when he gets a podium, do you feel a sense of pride, almost like like he's your son?
Yeah, not quite your son, but certainly, you know, you are proud to see him achieve. I say to people, say, oh, what, you know, how's Oscar? What's, you know, I reply that simply he's a good kid, and he's not a kid anymore, but he's a great, polite kid. And that's the biggest thing that you respect for those young drivers is the fact that only 2 years ago when he was the reserve driver for Alpine, he was at the Melbourne Grand Prix, we were at some functions, and he pulled up next to us, drove himself to the function, pulled up next to us, and we walked in together. Myself and my colleague at the time, and she or my directors, we spent most of the night talking to Oscar because he just wanted to hang, because he felt, you know, we were just hanging out at a function. That was pretty cool.
He hasn't forgot where he's come from.
No, absolutely not. He was at a function last year where one of our key industry members was at through contacts, etc., and his two boys were there, and he had a bit of a chat. Oscar was sort of being hurried up by you know, one of his minders, and he took the time to say, "Hey, g'day there, how you going?" My colleague sort of introduced himself again. He said, "I know who you are, you know, blah, blah," and sort of went through a few things and asked a few questions. So, and that's one of the good things. And, you know, Jack Doohan's very similar.
He seems like a real nice guy.
Yeah. I mean, Jack is, you know, I remember doing the very first interview I did with Jack was with Gold Coast Bulletin when he first started racing, went out to Mick's place and did an interview with the journo and did a photo shoot. And he's still the same Jack. You know, and that's what it's about. I mean, last year, once again, he was doing a gig just next to our Karting Australia tent. He then popped over, had a bit of a chat, said g'day to everyone in the tent. He's just keeping in touch with where he's come from, and that's all you can ask for from these drivers. They get busy, they get other hectic schedules, but to see them succeed and to see Jack make his opportunity for this year as well, it's great to see, and I look forward to the next batch coming through, because there is certainly more to come following both Oscar and Jack.
Do you get to go to any of the events, like the supercar events or the Grand Prix outside of Australia, to cheer from the sidelines, I suppose, of any of your alumni, graduates?
Not particularly. I mean, I at the supercar events, I'll go to the local events. To me, it's funny because you spend, I mean, the year in which I was doing the PR for Chris Atkinson with the World Rally Championship, where you spend a bit of time talking, you know, doing things with yourself at Rally Australia Diamond. I was doing, I think that year was 2005, I did 26 race weekends between World Rally Championship, supercars and karting. So you got to the point at some stage where you go, this is work. Sometimes you do have to have a downtime. You do have to put some reality checks in. Okay, I don't want to travel just because the fact of I'll go to watch another race. But certainly you still keep tabs on the personal interest of who's doing what and how they're traveling. It's pleasing to see those drivers continue on.
Oh, great. And just going back to Jack Doohan, oh, I hope he can just start the season strong this year. Like, I feel like the poor kid's got so much pressure on his shoulder with Colapinto kind of nipping in the background there. I actually hope he's keeping off social media and not looking at all of those comments and posts and not taking all that pressure on.
He comes from good stock though, right? His dad was a world champion many, many times, obviously on two wheels. Yep. You know, you'd think that Mick would have some words for Jack and advice.
He's certainly got some really good people around him. He's focused on the job at hand. You don't win five world championships by listening to others and tell you how it can be done. So very much I'd say the same thing for Jordan and Jack.
Yes.
No doubt.
He's got to where he is now based on his skill, where he's come from. Obviously, it probably does help to have a great team around you, but you have to be fast. You have to be good at what you do. So he's there and hopefully he can show that on the track and keep Colapinto from biting at his heels.
My goodness, Mon, what a great chat that was with Lee. We had so many questions for him about Karting Australia and karting in general, as well as just hearing all these interesting stories that we actually couldn't stop. So we've had to split this episode in two. So this is part one and part two will be released next week. But that was just epic.
Yeah, I could have spoken to Lee for hours. It's so fascinating getting back into the nitty gritty from the very, very beginning of a Formula One superstar's career.
Well, starting from the grassroots, this is where it all begins, right? With, you know, either kids seeing racing on TV in whatever format or just going to a kart track for some fun and just falling in love with it, or whether they come from a motorsport family with relatives, parents, fathers, etc., who might race or be involved in racing. Karting, it's pretty much where it starts for everyone.
For lack of better terms, it's the gateway drug. It's the gateway in to racing. And, you know, I'm fairly certain at some point in every kid's life, there is some sort of introduction to motorsport. I mean, I remember as a kid being taken down to the Speedway in Bunbury and watching the Speedway. And gosh, oh my gosh, as a kid, how exciting to see these cars that they're so loud, just zooming around. And I guess the next natural step for any inquisitive kid is to get them in a go-kart. So, yeah, it was fascinating. I enjoyed it.
And for anybody listening that doesn't know where Bunbury is, it's in the southwest of Western Australia, about 2 hours south of Perth. But similar to you, Mon, like I grew up in my high school and uni days were in Canberra, which is famous for the summer gnats. So that's a massive...
Did you live in Canberra?
I did, yeah. My dad was in the public service, so we got moved to Canberra when I was in high school.
Oh my God, I can't believe I didn't know that. Anyway, continue on.
Just was there for high school and uni, and as soon as I finished uni, I moved to Sydney, and then I moved to London, and then I travelled, and then went back to Melbourne, which is where we're originally from, and then I got a job in Perth. So anyway, there's my little life story in 35 seconds. Yeah, but Canberra's really well known for the Summer Nats, this big car festival, if you like. Hot rods and street machines and cars come from all over Australia to Canberra. And back then, we're talking the 80s when this was on, they used to do like a show and shine and a parade through the main streets of Canberra, of the CBD. They'd throw oil onto the road and then encourage the drivers to smoke them up, and they'd have burnout competitions. And it was pretty wild. The culture side of it kind of gave me the ick a little bit, but
Yes.
Because it was a lot of in your face, like bikey types, tattoos, wet t-shirt comps and stuff that I'm just not, and this is, we're talking the 80s, like a long time ago, and stuff that wasn't my vibe, but the cars, I just like, I loved the engine noise and the sound. So
yeah,
that's what I grew up, I guess, around. And that's what got me interested in cars initially.
The culture thing, it's the same thing for me with the speedway and, like, dare I say, I love watching drag racing and the monster trucks. And, but, you know, I loved all those things because they're big and they're loud and they're exciting. And they, you know, it wasn't very often that we got to do them. Monster trucks was a very special event in Bunbury because, you know, Bunbury, 2 hours south of Perth, back then it wasn't a really big city. Still not a really big city.
No.
But same thing with the culture. It was very much, you know, checkered shirts, shorts, thongs, definitely some mullets would have been happening, long hair on the men, that kind of thing, which, you know, each to your own. Everyone's got their own style. Everyone's got their own interests, but that wasn't my interest. But the cars, yes. I think also it was the family time aspect of it as well. You know, we went as a family and that was really fun. And as Lee said, karting in itself is a family sport.
And, you know, rallying is the same. And, you know, I still work with some rally events to this day in Western Australia, but rallying's the same. It very much is a family sport. And I love that about motorsport and especially about grassroots motorsport. There's one guy actually who competes at Targa West, and every Wednesday night, him and his male friends, him and his mates, get together in his shed and they work on the car that they're competing in. He's the driver, and it's just an every Wednesday night thing. It's like, you know, most of the time all of them can make it. I just think it's just so good. It's just so good to come together with a shared interest. Hey, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Have you ever been karting?
Oh, okay. You sent me go-karting, indoor go-karting.
Yes.
But one of your clients that opened up in Perth when they opened up.
Our Play Perth, yep.
Because I remember speaking to you as well. You'd asked me if I'd ever been karting and I said no. And I was so dead keen to get in a kart. And let me tell you, there was a group of seven of us, two men, the rest of us women. And I whooped the other women's butts. I was so good in that kart. And I came within like milliseconds of beating one of the two guys. So I almost came second and I was so proud. Oh my gosh. Living out my Formula One dreams.
How much fun is it?
It is honestly, if you are into motorsports, if you're into Formula One and you haven't been karting, you need to speak to Di because she will tell you that you need to go and then you will go.
And look, the one thing, and I will give a shout out to my old client, Power Play Perth. They've got various different indoor electric karting entertainment centres, for want of a better term. The track is two levels. There's a tunnel. The karts have got lights on them and they're electric. So, you know, one of the things that used to turn off a lot of women from karting or girls was grease and diesel and stinky tracks and, you know, but the electric karting, I mean, that, to be fair, that's more entertainment. That's more fun. I wouldn't say that's a gateway into a career in motorsport. But if you just want to have some fun and race and the electric go-karts, the indoor facilities just mean you can do it no matter whether it's 45 degrees outside or minus 15 and bucketing with rain.
The funnest part of being able to actually get into a kart yourself, whether it is indoor or outdoor, is getting a feel for it and understanding all these things that you're watching on TV, like taking the right line in a corner or where you've got to break into a corner or accelerate out of a corner. And, you know, putting all that into play is so much fun. And my God,
the
pride.
Yeah, but it's also a lot harder than it might. I mean, the electric carts are pretty easy to handle. But when I was in Italy and went to the Ferrari factory, they had a simulator there. Like a proper Ferrari simulator. There was an attendant that came and buckled me into a harness. And then as you take off, like the seat pulls you back in like an acceleration
force. With the G-force.
And then you hit the brakes. And then, you know, again, I think most of that's coming from the harness and the seat. But you hit the brakes and then the harness pulls back tight on you like you're braking. You go around a corner and the seat shudders a little bit, especially if you go off So tracking to the gravel traps, which I might have done like 300, 400, 500 times in my laps, but that was honestly, that was at the time it was €25 for 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. 7 minutes.
Wow.
Best €25 I've ever spent. It was so much fun. As soon as my time was up, I just said to the attendant, can I do it again? I just want to go again. I just like the adrenaline was pumping and it was just so much fun.
You actually reminded me when I was in San Antonio at one of the big travel conventions that us travel writers so fortunately get to go to. It was right before, I think it was the year before Vegas came back on the map as a track. The Vegas booth was heavily promoting the fact that Formula One was going to be back in Vegas. And as a part of that, they had a sim sitting there in their stall, sitting in there and actually feeling the steering and trying to work out the braking and all that sort of stuff. Oh, I think, you know, your 500 times off the track was nothing compared to my 800.
I know, because all I do is just go flat out. Like, it's just pedal to the metal the whole way. And then corner's coming, I just steer and don't slam even think on. About braking. Or slam on the brakes, end up spinning. In 2023, when I travelled to Italy, I stopped over in Qatar at the JBL store at Qatar Airport. They're one of the Formula One sponsors. They had a simulator sitting there in the store, and it's like an electrical store that sells, you know, headphones and camera gear. You get the gist. There was no one in the shop and there was no one on the sim. And I walked in and I said to one of the shop assistants that were just having a chat amongst themselves at the back of the shop, I said, is it working? Can I have a go? And he kind of rolled his eyes a bit and went and turned it on for me and set it up. And I was just doing lap after lap and it was free, right? And I'd been on it, I don't know, I want to say about 20 minutes, but maybe it was a bit less than that. And then this guy came into my peripheral vision. Like, they'd obviously been waiting behind me, but I just wasn't stopping. And he walks up to my peripheral vision, like giving me a signal, hey, can we have a go? And I was like, all right, I better stop now. So.
Oh, sorry. Fine. Well, hot tip for anyone that's traveling through Qatar. I mean,
it might have been a Grand Prix promo for the Qatar race. I'm not sure.
If any listeners are transiting through Qatar Airport at any point in time and happen to go past the store, let us know if you see the sim.
There was a Formula One sim at JBL, the electronic store at Qatar Airport. Oh, I should say too, there's two JBL stores at Qatar Airport. So it was in the store closest to the garden and the central oasis bit in the airport. You'll know what I mean if you're there.
Perfect. Anyway, Di, it was so nice to finish this episode having just a chat with you and I. It's been a long time since we've done that. Great to have a chat.
I know, and we learned something new about each other as well.
Exactly. We've got to do this more often. So, all right. And if you guys enjoyed listening to this episode, we would love for you to leave us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast listening app. If you want to chat to us further, you're more than welcome to email us on and away we go, f1podcast@gmail.com, or you can join the chat on any of our socials. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Just search for And Away We Go, F1 Podcast, and you'll find us there. Happy to chat.
We're everywhere. Join us next week for part two of our chat with Lee Hanacek. Well, thank you, Mon, and thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.